You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. By the end of last year, there were nearly 1,500 people in California's jails who had been determined to be incompetent to stand trial due to mental illness, a number that has quadrupled over the last decade, according to the California Health and Human Services Agency. Right now, the way it works is that one department works on reducing the backlog for people with mental illness, and another department works with people with intellectual disabilities. A CalMatters investigation details a case in Sacramento that makes it clear there is a long way to go to fix the process, which routinely allows people with disabilities to fall through the cracks, costing them valuable time and, in some cases, years off their life. Case in point, Lorenzo Mays. Mays is intellectually disabled and spent close to 9 years essentially lost in the Sacramento County Jail, and he was never convicted of the crime he was charged with and has never been tried. Jocelyn Weiner is a staff writer who focuses on health and mental health for CalMatters and spent a long time investigating Mays' case and joins us with her reporting. Good morning, Jocelyn.
Hi, thanks for having me.
This is a very long and complicated and tragic case, and we're going to try to simplify it. But let's begin with Lorenzo Mays. How did you come to learn about him?
About 3 years ago, I was doing a story on the backlog of people who are incompetent to stand trial, and I had heard about his case while reporting that story, and it has just stuck with me ever since. So over the years, I've tried to visit him here and there, and just the idea that he continued to move through the system and nothing ever happened really jarred me.
Given that you've spoken with him and you've spent a long time working on this, tell us who Lorenzo Mays is, his background and his upbringing, and what brought him to Sacramento.
Yeah, so he grew up in the South. He was the seventh of 15 children. His family moved constantly. There was a lot of abuse and instability in his childhood, and he was hospitalized several times for self-harm. And then he was also identified young as being slow to learn and put into special education. When he got older, he had two young children. He was homeless on and off, working fast food jobs. But also really beloved by his family. His sisters just described him as like a really kind, gentle person. A lot of people did. And he came in January of 2010 to Sacramento to visit family for what was supposed to be a relatively quick visit.
You call this a legal odyssey, and it began back in May in 2010, so over a decade ago, at a motel in North Sacramento. How did Lorenzo Mays become involved with the criminal justice system and with the law?
Yeah, so on May 8th of 2010, a 29-year-old man named Marcel Hatch was shot at the Eco Lodge, and he died 2 days later. There were five people who were eventually arrested, including Lorenzo and three of his siblings and the boyfriend of another of the siblings. That boyfriend and Marcel Hatch had been rival pimps working out of that motel. And the day before the shooting, they'd gotten into a big fight. So on May 8th, that the boyfriend arrived at May's family's apartment. He was all beat up. And eventually Lorenzo was coaxed to join the three siblings and the boyfriend in going to the Eco Lodge. And that's kind of where it started. Lorenzo thought there was maybe going to be a fist fight, but then someone brought a gun. There's a lot of variation in the court record about what happened exactly and who stayed in the car, who held the gun. But in the end, Marcel Hatch was shot and killed.
Has someone been convicted and sentenced of being responsible for this homicide?
So The boyfriend was convicted of murder and sentenced to, I think, 25 years to life. And then Lorenzo's three siblings, their charges were reduced and they were all eventually convicted of voluntary manslaughter. But yeah, Lorenzo himself never stood trial.
Why did he never stand trial when it seems as though for the other people who were arrested and charged, their legal journey has pretty much been completed? What's different about Lorenzo?
So Lorenzo, he was deemed incompetent to stand trial. It took a couple years before that happened while he was waiting in jail. Once he was deemed incompetent to stand trial, it sort of starts this whole other chain of events in motion. And basically because of his intellectual disability, the idea is that he couldn't understand the system well enough, the court system well enough to get a fair trial. So instead he got nothing.
And in your reporting, you reported that Lorenzo Mays was reported to have an IQ of 55. How does that change what a normal case would be for someone who is arrested in terms of being arraigned within 2 days, the right to a speedy trial, versus someone like Lorenzo who has competency issues like mental illness or intellectual disabilities?
In a normal case, if someone's charged with a felony, they're supposed to have the right to a speedy trial within 60 days. Although, to be fair, that for various reasons, that doesn't always happen. But people like Lorenzo who are flagged for possible competency issues, basically those criminal proceedings are paused while the court works to restore their competency.
And so what happened over the course of 9 years? Was he essentially kind of lost within the system?
Yeah. So a lot of things happened over the course of 9 years, but So after he was found incompetent to stand trial, that took 2 years before that even happened. And then 8 months after that, the court ordered him sent to Porterville, which was a state hospital, or is a state hospital for people with developmental disabilities. But Porterville refused him. So then they sent him eventually to somewhere else called California Psychiatric Transitions. But he was sent back again after a few months. And frankly, most of the time he was in solitary confinement inside the Sacramento County Jail. He had at least four different attorneys, and he came before, you know, a couple dozen judges, and they kept evaluating him over and over for competency, and almost everybody continued to agree that he wasn't competent.
Given that you've spoken with him multiple times, how did he have a good grasp of the situation that he was in?
He just knew that he kept waiting for the system to work for him the way it was working for his siblings. And that he was told that he was incompetent to stand trial. And he kept working with all of these competency trainers to try to understand the system. But no, I mean, there's a lot that he really doesn't understand about what happened.
And I think the biggest takeaway when we get to the end of your reporting, he is no longer in custody. He was released, but he was never tried for anything, correct?
Right.
How does that, yeah, I mean, how does that happen? How do you navigate or go within a system, the prison system, for 9 years and then get released? Is there any accountability for what happened? He was, it feels like he was essentially lost within the prison system.
Right. And yeah, I mean, there are laws that dictate certain timelines. Like at this point, it's supposed to be that Once the court refers him, once the court referred him to Porterville, it was supposed to start a clock ticking that would have been, you know, that meant that his case needed to be resolved, or he needed to be restored to competency within 2 years. But that obviously didn't happen. I don't see evidence of accountability. I mean, a lot of people knew about it. I don't know if people didn't really grasp the broader picture of what was happening, but yeah, certainly I haven't heard of anyone being called to task on what happened.
You did speak with some people who are involved in agencies and departments. Is this an extreme case, or have things changed since this first initially happened more than a decade ago?
Yeah, so I couldn't get everybody to respond to me, but who actually did make themselves available was the Department of Developmental Services. And they definitely said that Lorenzo's case was an extreme and sort of a perfect storm of factors that led to his situation, such as Porterville rejecting him, which they rarely do. And they also did say that certain protocols have changed now that make it so that this case, from their perspective, is more of a history lesson than a current concern. But on the flip side, if you talk to advocates, as you mentioned, there are a lot of people in jails waiting to go to state hospitals, and our jails and prisons are full of people who probably don't belong there, that have serious mental illnesses or other disabilities. But, and maybe those people aren't all there 9 years, but I think it isn't that surprising when someone's there a year or two.
And you spent so much time going through thousands and thousands of pages of court documents, medical records, learning that there had been attorney after attorney after attorney, like nearly 24 judges have been involved in some way in this case, evaluated by more than a half dozen different psychologists. But at the center of this, the most important piece is there's a human being, and one that you've also talked to repeatedly. So you've met with Lorenzo May several times in conversations in person and on the phone. What did you learn about him? What do you want people to know about him?
He's just I'm not the only person who has this impression, but a lot of people have sort of described him as being very gentle and quiet and almost childlike in terms of his demeanor. He's very easy to talk to. He doesn't talk a lot, but I mean, beyond that, I guess the fact that he harbors no anger for what happened to him is very striking to me.
You actually sent us a soundbite, a small clip with Lorenzo May, so let's take a listen.
We're ready to go. Ready to go back to school, ready to get my life on the road, man. I've been dead for a long time, but still living. I know I gotta work hard for my things again. Start work, I get a job, start back working hard. Just starting from ground zero right now. Nothing.
I've been dead for a long time, but still living. What do you want readers to understand and take away from your reporting?
I think we have this assumption of the way the justice system works, and especially, you know, for people who are behind bars, we can't see them. A lot of times they're off people's radar completely, if you're not sort of closely related to them in some way. But the justice system is not always working the way that you assume that it should. And there are a lot of very vulnerable people in our jails and prisons at this point, and sometimes really bad things are happening to them.
Jocelyn, thank you so much for joining us with your investigation.
Thanks so much for having me.
Jocelyn Wiener is a staff writer who focuses on mental health for CalMatters. Still ahead, classical music isn't really known for being welcoming to women and artists of color. We'll learn how this is changing by sparking that interest at a young age. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.